What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly podcast is back. Thanks for being with us. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and I'm even more fired up than usual this week, guys. We are going to punctuate our off-season recap series. We've visited with 30 beat writers thus far over the past 15 podcasts, and I think we saved the best for last. We've got Falcons and Patriots discussion, naturally, today with Knox Bardeen of 929 The Game and Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal. Both of those gentlemen were also the authors of their respective team reports in the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine. And I've tried to bring on as many of those authors as possible to chat over the past couple months. And whether they wrote for PFW or not, obviously, I just want to send out a huge heartfelt thanks to everyone that has helped kind of make this podcast possible over the past couple months. I know how busy the beat writers are, and I know that we relish our fleeting free time in the off season. So it means a lot that everyone has been nice enough to contribute to this podcast and help ensure that it's as insightful and informative as possible. I'm very satisfied with the way things have turned out, and I just hope that you guys kind of share in that satisfaction as well. So before we chat with Knox and Christopher, let's talk about our great sponsor, Loot Crate, real quick. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionista, try Loot Wear. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. So what is the franchise today? How about Kingdom? Excuse me, that's the theme. The theme is Kingdom, and the franchises include Zelda, The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and The Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, guys, Loot Crate has been killing it in recent months, and this Kingdom theme is no exception. So you can get a Lord of the Rings t-shirt. There's going to be all kinds of other cool stuff, pop culture items for you in your loot. It's the in your Loot Crate, excuse me. It is the best surprise that you know is coming. So one more time, be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. Enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, great stuff there. One more piece of administrative stuff I want to get out of the way. If you guys haven't done so already, please head to iTunes. I trust that you have by now, and I beg your forgiveness for me having to beat a dead horse at the top of every podcast here, but go to iTunes, click subscribe, and while you're there, a rating and a review would be awesome. We really do appreciate it. We've gained some traction this offseason with this series, and looking to continue that momentum heading into the season when we'll have a lot more fun surprises, special guests, and features lined up for you. So stick with us, and the best way to do that is by heading to iTunes and subscribing to the Pro Football Weekly podcast today. All right, enough of my blabbering. I have Knox Bardeen of 929 The Game ready to talk some Falcons. The Pro Football Weekly offseason recap series moves to Atlanta, where Knox Bardeen of 929 The Game and also the author of the Falcons report in our 2017 PFW Preview magazine is nice enough to join the podcast. Knox, what's going on? Thanks so much for taking some time.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
Of course. Yeah, the pleasure definitely all ours. And before we talk football, let me get the important stuff out of the way. We're taping this on Tuesday, and I understand you just took a tour of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I've been hearing a lot about the NFL's lowest concession prices, including $5 Bud Lights. Let me ask you, and I'm mostly kidding, is this the Falcons' way of buying back fans' goodwill after 28-3?
No, they launched... They actually announced these prices well before the Super Bowl debacle. And it's just Arthur Blank's way of giving back. And it's not only $5 beers, and those are big beers, not those small 12 ounces. but it's like $2 refillable Cokes, $1 hot dogs, $2 hamburgers. You're going to be able to feed a family when you come to a football game here.
That is very cool. That's you just don't hear that in today's sports environment. So that's totally awesome. What about the sight lines, kind of the new construction, just your overall feel, having gotten to see it firsthand now?
It looks fantastic. I tell you what, we were kind of spoiled in the Georgia Dome being right there on the 50-yard line in an open-air press box inside, so I was a little nervous about moving down to the corner, but they got us wrapped around the end zone up to about the 20s. It's kind of like, here's how I explained it after we got to look today. It's kind, you're high enough to have an all-22 feel, but you're low enough still to see faces. So I think it's going to be a good experience for the press.
Okay, very
great,
cool.
Great for the fans.
Yeah, fantastic. No doubt. All right, well, outstanding. Let's talk a little football with Knox Bardeen, and I've got more jokes, but in all seriousness, with the new stadium and two new coordinators, including, of course, the assistant of the year and Kyle Shanahan leaving, does it feel like maybe some of the continuity with the players is lost with a lot of changes elsewhere?
Well, I'd be lying to you if I told you that wasn't a concern, the continuity. However, with the promotions that they made, one on the defensive side, Marquand Manuel, they went inside the house, and everyone loves him. Every defensive player I've talked to during the offseason absolutely loves him. He's a player's coach. He's a fiery guy, kind of like Dan Quinn, and I don't think they're going to skip a beat, and that defense has nowhere to go but grow and get better. On offense, we're going to see, and this is like, you know, you're talking about, what, the eighth most prolific offense in history last year for the Falcons, so we'll see if Steve Sarkisian can come in. He doesn't have to improve on it. Heck, he just has to be able to get close to replicate it.
Right.
But that's got to be the biggest question mark right now, or at least, you know, off the field question mark, is can he go in there and do the same thing that Shanahan did?
Well, and that's, yeah, my next question essentially. But I guess before we go there, I know it's a few months old now, but it is an off-season recap podcast, and I just have to know very quickly, was Richard Smith the scapegoat in this thing? That was a surprise. I know it's way back to February, but what was your read on that?
Well, that actually happened a little early. I mean, it definitely happened in February, but he was stripped of his play calling duties at the bye week.
Okay.
So this was Dan Quinn and Marquand Manuel calling plays for the back part of the season. And as you saw from that, that's when the defense came alive. That's when this team really moved from a Falcons team that could do some things to one that made it to the Super Bowl.
Okay, interesting. And I definitely want to ask you about that awesome young talent influx on defense. But before we go there, the very early returns on this new dynamic of MVP Matt Ryan and I believe rookie NFL play caller Steve Sarkisian, after, of course, Ryan and Shanahan just so thoroughly gelled last year. What are your thoughts, or what have you been able to see very early on?
I tell you, and you say perfectly gelled, he and Shanahan worked together probably because they had to. And I know the outcome on the field looked fantastic. And that was a meeting of the minds. But that first year they were together, word is they didn't get along all that well. They didn't see eye to eye. And they kind of came together in that second year for the team. And the product on the field was beautiful.
Okay.
Everything we're hearing now is Matt Ryan and Steve Sarkisian get along fantastically. He didn't come in here and say, here's the offense, I'm going to change this, this, and this. He sat down with every offensive player, starting with Matt Ryan, and said, how can we do this to where it's going to be best for you guys to continue growing, maybe even grow a little bit? So this is going to feel exactly like last year's offense. There's going to be a few new wrinkles, but every offensive player has said they really appreciated him coming in here and not trying to rock the boat.
You know, and obviously they have to go on the field and do it, but it's music to my ears at least, and I'm sure Falcons fans to see. It sounds like Sark sort of checked his ego at the door, and how could you not? Like you said, a top 10 all-time NFL offense, you don't want to tinker with much at all. So it'll be fun to see what little wrinkles he adds to it. What about the defense? And before we talk about some of those second-year players getting ready to try and ascend, what about Grady Jarrett and Dontari Poe, that sort of pairing inside, and then eventually Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley on the edges? Is this somewhat of an acknowledgement that maybe the Falcons know that they needed just a little bit more pass rush in the Super Bowl, or pass rush from someone outside of Grady Jarrett, and maybe they're celebrating today?
And they absolutely did. And you're talking about a Vic Beasley who led the league in sacks last year, but he didn't get one in the Super Bowl.
Right.
They definitely needed some more help up front. They needed some help in the linebacker corps. You saw him address that in the draft as well. This was a defense that gelled towards the end of the year, and that's because all those rookies started figuring things out. But yeah, they know that feeling they had at the Super Bowl, you know, 98 plays on defense, however much it was.
Yeah.
When they drafted, everything they did in the offseason, that was kind of Dan Quinn saying, that's never going to happen to me again.
Okay. Well, that's wise. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Dan Quinn's. I love the energy. I love the aggressiveness. I really love everything about what he's done early on. But what do you think specifically about sort of what he's doing with his players to make sure that this heartbreak doesn't linger? I mean, does his personality kind of help right out of the gate there? What has he said about the way he's trying to move on with this club?
It's exactly right. It's a personality. And that didn't just start with the Super Bowl loss. It started from when he first walked in the door. This is the kind of guy who gets down in the dirt with his players. If he can't get a point across from talking to him, he'll get down and show him. There's a lot of his coaching staff that comes out in cleats and actually gets down and mucks it up with the players. So from a very early moment with Dan Quinn, he's got these players buying in. They'll run through a brick wall, if you'll allow me that cliche.
Mm-hmm.
So when he tells them, yeah, the Super Bowl, it's going to hurt, and it probably will sting somewhere in your soul forever.
Yeah.
We weren't built to make it this year. We were built for 2017, 2018, 2019, and I truly think that's the case, and apparently they truly buy into that too. They were just a year early.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and obviously things accelerated because of some of those young defenders, in large part Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, and of course Keanu Neal. You kind of mentioned in our preview, and again, I'd encourage listeners to check it out. Knox's writing is awesome in here, and you can get the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview Magazine on newsstands now. But you kind of write about how sort of the rookies didn't always know where they were supposed to be, just running around and using their speed. What are reasonable expectations now that they've had an offseason to actually figure out their assignments in addition to boasting that unique athleticism?
Yeah, we've had a lot of chances to talk to Keanu Neal and Deion Jones, a lot of these second-year guys now. And instead of coming in during the offseason and say, hey, I want to work on this, I want to fix this part about the game, I want to learn how to do this,
mm-hmm.
All of them have been talking about fine-tuning. They're not learning anything new. They're fine-tuning things that they already had. So this is going to be a much different defense. There were, you know, 15, 20, 25 times, it happened all the time where you would see a veteran like Ricardo Allen, the free safety, would scoot up into the box and move someone around, or he would be talking or trying to cover for these rookies that were in front of him. Sometimes he would so much that he would get out of position. That didn't happen. And you asked me what to expect. Well, if you look at this defense, I think they were ranked 23rd, 25th, something like that, for the whole entire season last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from the bye week on, the last 6 weeks of the season, they were a top 10 defense. So I don't know if they're going to be a top 10 defense all year in 2017, but I think they'll play closer to that than they will in the 20s.
Okay. And what about Grady Jarrett? If we didn't know his name prior to the Super Bowl, certainly we do now. But locally, I'm guessing you guys were already pretty excited about this young talent, this young interior pass rusher. What's next for him now to build off his rising star after the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I tell you what, I think that if the Falcons would have won that Super Bowl, he would have been the MVP.
I do too.
With what he did there. And from the minute he got here, I like to call him a refrigerator on wheels, because that's kind of how he plays. He's a short, stocky guy that shouldn't be able to move like he does, but he's very impactful getting to that second level. And now you put Dontari Poe next to him, who is just this gap hog, this gap sealer. I think that's going to free Grady Jarrett to be even more able to move around, get after the quarterback. So I think, you know, there's no way on earth I'm going to tell you he's going to continue doing what he did in the Super Bowl every single game.
Yeah.
But I think you'll see a lot more of him and maybe get to know his name outside of Atlanta.
Well, if he does, Knox, look out NFL sack record. So and for a defensive tackle to do that would be something, especially in a 40 defense. What about, so if we learn Grady Jarrett's name in the Super Bowl, certainly we knew Tack McKinley's name after draft night and his I don't even want to call it unfortunate because it was hilarious, but his little slip of the tongue after getting drafted. Just your very early impressions. And again, I know you haven't seen him on the field yet, but what Tack McKinley brings to this group.
Yeah, I tell you, he's going to bring some fire, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because Vic Beasley Whereas you guys see him on TV and know what he can do. He's a very quiet guy in the locker room. So it's exactly kind of like fire and ice. He's the exact opposite of what Vic Beasley is. So, and I think firing up this defensive line might be good. This kind of, he's got a lot of Dan Quinn in him, Tech McKinley. I can understand where those two would have got along from almost minute one of them getting to know each other. It was very surprising what happened on draft night, and we've been hearing a lot of things about him getting kicked out of UCLA's practice sometimes just because he's so, you know, on fire. But, you know, I think that's definitely a good thing. And now that we finally got him in Atlanta up at Flowery Branch facility and we're hearing that he might be ready, you know, week three of the preseason, that's a big move for the Falcons.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned kind of how he sort of fits in with what Quinn does, or personality-wise they mesh. It's a good segue because I wanted to ask you, I'm a football dork, so maybe no one else picks up on this, but one of the things, this was like poetry in motion for me last year, the way that seemingly the Falcons front office and the coaching staff synced up to acquire those players and know exactly how they were going to fit into roles or what skill sets they were looking for within the schemes. It's fun to watch with Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff and maybe the most experienced front office. I think, what, he's got three former GMs in that front office. It's pretty neat when you see that happen. We hear too often about egos clashing, and certainly in Carolina and Kansas City, but this seems to be just the opposite of that.
Yeah, and you've even got a former GM in Rich McKay who no longer has any duties. He's worried about building the new stadium. So, yeah, there's a lot of former GMs there. But one of the things that I think about all the time when I think about Dan Quinn is how he looks at a player differently than most coaches. You saw it when he was the DC in Seattle, and he takes a guy like Red Bryant and moves him around. He takes a Michael Bennett and moves him around. He says, you might not have ever tried this, but this is going to be best for you in my system. And everything is, I'm going to take this player for my system. We all said, Keanu Neal, you move to 17 and you take a safety. What are you thinking? And it was the perfect guy for his system. And the same thing with Deion Jones, an undersized linebacker. Right. He said, I want this defense to be the fastest defense in the league. And they started with Deion Jones. Heck, all three of those defensive picks they made in 2016 were top 10 in the 40-yard dash at the combine. So we're going to play fast. We're going to play physical. And I'm going to build this team because I like these players in the roles that I'm going to put them. And you saw he moved Vic Beasley around from Leo to Sam linebacker, and now he's going to toy a little bit around with that again now that they have another pass rusher on the other side. So this is Dan Quinn, and he's kind of like a mastermind when it comes to finding the perfect role for every player on the defense.
Yeah, it's a great call and a bit of a trailblazer. Great example with Michael Bennett becoming kind of that inside-out force and really, again, started a bit of a trend because you didn't see guys moving around as much, and now Bennett's as good as anyone at doing that. Let's talk about the offense. It may not have a lot of questions, you know, per se, after the coordinator change, but Julio Jones, he's recovering from foot surgery, of course. I believe Thomas Dimitroff just said today, Tuesday, he is recovering very, very well. So I ask you, what are the chances we see the NFL's most freakish wideout consistently getting his freak on at 100% this year? It seems like that hasn't happened often enough.
Dan Quinn told us verbatim about a month ago when they broke minicamp that every player outside of Tack McKinley was going to be healthy when training camp started. So we're expecting that to mean Julio, and we asked him specifically, Julio Jones, he said yes. So we're expecting him to fully be ready for training camp. And even if he's not, even if he has to ease in a little bit, he's going to be ready to go for week one. And we will see exactly what he can do. Because when you say freak, that's exactly what he is.
Yeah, no doubt. We're chatting with Knox Bardeen of 929 The Game. Make sure you check him out on Twitter, at Knox Bardeen. What would you say, though? And Julio's through 6 years now, and he's certainly on a potential Hall of Fame trajectory. But how many of those games do you think he's in? And I know no one plays at 100%, blah, 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 but he's really tough, man, and he really has quite the pain tolerance. Do you think it's been, a handful of games where maybe we've seen him not dealing with something that he's kind of hiding?
Yeah, he has, you know, a foot issue, and he's got screws in his foot, we know that, and he's done a couple of hamstrings since he's been here. Even the foot issues go back to Alabama. So this is a guy who we know is probably never after week one, and not even week one for real. Right. He's never going to be fully healthy in a game. So how much toughness can he take? And he'll ask any coach, ask him, you know, it's tough to pull him out of the game. It's tough to keep him out even when he knows he should. So this is a guy, and very much like, you know, the guy who played before him in Roddy White, their pain tolerance is high, and they just have this desire to be on the field at all times, even at the detriment to their own health.
And you know, Knox, it's kind of the ultimate irony, because what really set this Falcons offense, or what really pushed it to the next level, or pushed it really over the top, was leaning on maybe the game's most talented wideout less. So you saw Taylor Gabriel emerge, you saw Mohamed Sanu, and the list goes on. Obviously the running backs that we haven't even gotten to yet. Might we add a new name to that mix this year? Is perhaps Austin Hooper, or you tell me, someone else who could become a household name by this time next season?
I don't know if he's going to be a household name. I'll give you two. I'll start with the lesser of the two. Justin Hardy, we've been hearing from players and coaches that he's done some dramatic things in the offseason with his route running, with his hands. So the team is expecting some things from their number three receiver there.
Okay.
But when you said Austin Hooper, and I think you're ready for him to break out. There's some people here that think he could be up in the top two of touchdown catches this year for the Falcons when it comes to any of their pass catchers. You know, Julio Jones, Austin Hooper, he's going to be looked at a lot in this offense. And he was a guy that, you know, had to come in here and play second fiddle for a while, then had to step in when the injury happened to Tammy.
Right.
But now I think with a full offseason, remember he was one of these West Coast guys last year that didn't get to do a whole lot of offseason work because of the quarter system.
Yep.
Now he's getting to do that again, and I think he's going to flourish.
All right, listen up, fantasy football players. That was your nugget right there. I just wrote about Hooper today. He's still going as like a middling tight end too, but opportunity knocks for Austin Hooper, so someone to keep an eye on for sure. Knox, let's finish up kind of looking quickly at both backfields. I'm going to save the running backs for last, but what about the secondary? A lot of money tied up now at corner, I believe. Trufant gets his new deal, correct me if I'm wrong, and then Robert Alford got his last offseason. What's the mix look like there, and does that have a chance to be a real strength for this club?
Yeah, it does. And those are your corners right there. And then you add in a guy like C.J. Goodwin, who will be on the field quite a bit. Brian Poole, who was the undrafted rookie that was just amazing.
Right.
This is going to be a fun secondary. Ricardo Allen, who we've already talked about. I think when you talk about breakout players in this secondary, watch for Ricardo Allen. He spent a lot of time last year, like I said, helping these rookies get to where they need to go. He is going to be a ball hawk this year. He could up his game to 4, 5, 6 interceptions this year. Wouldn't Wow. surprise me a bit.
All right, and I'll tell you what, Knox, we can listen for Ricardo Allen, too, because, man, do his pads pop. When he comes into a hit, he's fun. He runs out there with a lot of energy and a lot of physicality. And we'll close with the running backs. I don't know if they get the credit they deserve in this offense and what it did last year, but first, Devontae Freeman, and even by the time this podcast publishes, he may have his new deal. But assuming that you agree the extension is imminent, how will that affect sort of his role in the offense? I guess you could look at it two ways. Maybe the Falcons brass would look to preserve him a little bit more, or maybe they'd look to get every penny's worth.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Devontae Freeman, we're assuming the extension is coming. What do you think it might do to his role in the offense? Would they potentially look to preserve him and continue expanding Tevin Coleman, or maybe try and get every penny's worth out of Freeman after giving him the new deal?
Well, here's the interesting thing about both the Falcons and Devontae Freeman, just from being in the locker room with him for a couple of years. Devontae Freeman's not going to let you preserve him. He wants to go out there and run through every defensive tackle, middle linebacker, and safety on the planet. That's just the way he is. So he's not going to sit around for that. And here's where the Falcons are going to come in. This offense works best. Shanahan will tell you, Sarkisian will tell you, Matt Ryan will tell you, this offense works best if there is balance as possible. 50-50 run pass, and then when it comes to these ball carriers, they're so different in what they do, and you can put them out there on the field at the same time. They can get out into passing routes, even from the X, Y, or Z. They can do it all. It's so valuable to have them both out on the field. But when you can mix and match, and I don't know if it's going to be 70-30 or 60-40, but the Falcons are going to do whatever they need for these backfields. And this is, you know, you're talking about fantasy nuggets. you know, this is something fantasy guys don't like, is the fact that you don't know which of these guys is going to go off on a given week, but that's just how the Falcons run it.
Right, that makes sense. And just on the way out, Knox Bardeen, 929 The Game. Check him out on Twitter, at Knox Bardeen. I actually asked Thomas Dimitroff in February at the Combine about where you find running backs. Obviously, Devontae Freeman, I believe a former fourth rounder. Tevin Coleman, I think round three. How much does that play into his mind? How much do you think that complicates this contract discussion that I believe has at least been, it's at least been out there since Freeman mentioned Super Bowl week he wanted to get paid?
That's one of the things I put that as a strike in the column for the Falcons. When you're trying to negotiate a contract and Devontae Freeman has the numbers to be a top five and everything like that, but right. then Thomas Dimitroff can say, I found you in the fourth round. And he says, I found Tevin Coleman in the third round. If you don't want to take this amount of money, and it's probably less than Freeman wants, I'll go out and find another one in the third or the fourth round a year or two later. So he has a track record of getting some pretty good running back finds in the middle of this draft. So I think that works against Devontae Freeman. But then again, you know, he's put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in for this team, and the Falcons typically reward offensive superstars that do that.
Okay, yeah, 48 straight appearances for Devontae Freeman and back-to-back double-digit touchdown seasons. He has truly been a monster. If he gets anything in the vicinity of the reported Le'Veon Bell offer, you'd think Freeman would run to cash that check, but I don't think it's going to be that extreme. We'll have to wait and see. Knox, we really appreciate your time in these last free moments before things get crazy. This is a lot of fun, and we'd love to have you back on when the season gets rolling to talk some more Falcons.
Anytime you want me, I promise not to be as hard to track down next time.
Oh, man, I'm glad you were hard to track down. Everyone should be taking time at this time of the year. That is Knox Bardeen of 929 The Game. Great information on the Falcons. Make sure you check out his info and the team report on the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine. That is available on newsstands now. Thanks again, Knox Bardeen.
My pleasure.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, so are Dan Quinn's Falcons ready to buck the trend of Super Bowl losers falling on hard times the next season? I know I can't wait to find out, and thank you very much to Knox for providing some context on what Atlanta's offseason has been like after that Super Bowl heartbreak. And up last, it's the team that you would think would, you know, not necessarily still be celebrating, but also not necessarily attack the offseason the way that the Patriots did. And Christopher Price of the Boston Sports Journal, nice enough to join the program now and explain what exactly has happened in a wild few months in Foxborough. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast off-season recap series, we head to Foxborough and visit with the defending champions, or get the latest on the defending champions, I should say, with Chris Price. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at CPriceNFL and checking out his work, I believe, in a new spot. Chris, tell us about the latest news with you.
Yeah, very exciting to tell folks that I've moved on to the Boston Sports Journal. It's bostonsportsjournal.com. This is really the brainchild of Greg Bedard, who pulled together a handful of writers up here in Boston. And we launched earlier this week in late July, and it's gone really, really well so far. The response has been incredible. It's a subscriber-driven site, and so we are going to kind of look for a high bar, aim for a high bar when it comes to, content, this is going to be a very fascinating experiment, because as you know, subscriber-driven sites, there's still a lot that we don't know about what's going on out there. But I will say this, in the first couple of days, we've had 1,500 subscribers, and we're really kind of aiming to suit the model that DKPittsburghSports.com put out, and they got 40,000 subscribers in the first 3 years, and they've expanded tremendously by going hyper local and offering really super local coverage. So we're doing the same thing here in Boston, and so far it's gone really, really well.
Well, Chris, I'm here in Chicago, of course, but super excited to watch from afar what happens with you guys. It looks like it's just been a remarkably successful first 48 hours or so. We're recording this on Wednesday. It may not get to our listeners for a couple more days. So we wish you all the best of luck, and whatever we can do at PFW, we love to try and do for a friend to help with you.
I appreciate that. It's been great so far, and hopefully with the support of guys like you, we'll be able to take it to a higher level going forward.
Very cool. Yeah, and they already are assembling a very talented cast of writers over there, so make sure you check out what's going on at bostonsportsjournal.com with Chris Price. We've got you on today, of course, to talk about the Patriots, so I'm just going to launch right in. Chris, can you remember another offseason in New England or elsewhere from a defending champion that rivals the Patriots in terms of both its aggressiveness and maybe its unconventional manner?
No, I really can't in terms of a defending champion approaching the offseason. The only comparison that I can think of is the Patriots between the 2006 and 2007 offseasons, when they were so aggressive in their pursuit of Wes Welker and Randy Moss and their attempt to really take that offense to a whole new level. But in terms of being a defending champ, in terms of kind of, going at it, it's such an aggressive manner, coming off a title run like the Patriots have done. I can't think of any other team that's done what they've been able to do. You look at Brandon Cooks, you look at Gilmore, you look at Dwayne Allen, Coney Ealy. They've really brought in some new faces here, and it's really exciting to see if they're going to be able to get to where they want to be again in 2017-2018.
Yeah, the talent influx has been remarkable, and obviously it's the veteran talent influx. Has Bill Belichick been asked yet if his thought process here is kind of, well, forget the rookie learning curve, I've got the best quarterback or maybe the one or two best quarterbacks on the planet, and we know what we can be right now, so let's get guys who we already know what they are at the NFL level and see if we can keep it going?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think, quite frankly, even if they hadn't been super aggressive in the free agent market this year, in the trade market, going to get Cooks and signing Gilmore, quite frankly, there weren't going to be a lot of open spots on this team for younger players anyway.
Right.
So I'm not saying that they tried to approach it in a different manner, but this is a very veteran-heavy team. They're not an overly old team, but they're a very veteran-heavy team. And so, you're really going to the draft with the idea of, we're drafting for 2018 and beyond. These guys who, guys like Derek Rivers, guys like, Garcia, McDermott, those guys were made with an eye toward, being developmental guys. So,
right.
Yeah, it is. The offseason has been absolutely fascinating from a number of different perspectives, including the fact that, as you mentioned, they went more for veteran guys as opposed to, going through the draft.
And Chris, it depends on how you want to interpret it, and maybe I'm still stuck, hung up on something no one else is at this point, but it seems to me the Jimmy Garoppolo decision is potentially the one thing that goes against the grain with this approach. How do you kind of reconcile, a QB who's turning 40 and seemingly better than ever, but yet you hold on to Garoppolo rather than maybe cashing in that, that asset for other guys that can help right away?
I think there are a couple of different things in play when you're looking at the decision to keep Garoppolo in place. I think, first of all, and this isn't the only reason, but I think this is the, right off the top, I don't think they're completely comfortable with Jacoby Brissett yet. And the idea of keeping Garoppolo around at least for another year allows for another year for Brissett to work through any sort of issues he might have and become a true number two to Tom Brady. I think also, quite frankly, there's an insurance policy there. There are some up here in New England who believe that it's an attempt for the Patriots to go all in, and they just want to, they're going to, cash out their chips, you know, a year or two down the road with, you know, without Brady, you know, and what that's going to look like at this point, I don't know. But I think that, you know, the short answer is they basically kicked the can down the road for another year, and they're looking to try to find a, you know, a way to kind of keep him around for as long as possible for as few dollars as possible. And then they're going to, you know, address it this, you know, this coming offseason. I also think, too, that it's important to note that there's always a possibility of a Teddy Bridgewater type of situation here.
Sure.
And you know, if someone goes down, if someone's leg, you know, snaps in two, you never root for that. But at the same time, it creates a market for a quarterback. You know, and, you know, if there's a team out there that might necessarily be inclined to overpay for a quarterback, you know, they'll know that, you know, they can give the Patriots a call and kind of, you know, make a run at Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's going to be interesting to see again how it all kind of comes together for them. But, you know, the Garoppolo thing, it's going to be a question for this team if he does end up hanging around here throughout this year and into the 2017 offseason.
Yeah, a great point by you, Chris. Obviously, the Patriots' leverage only increases the longer they hold on to him, at least until we get to the season and other quarterback situations either you know, become in flux or the opposite of that. But a great point. Sam Bradford was not worth a first-rounder last spring. He was the week before the season started. So, you know, outside, and I want to get to them too, obviously, Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore, but outside of the two headliners from this fascinating influx of talent, which addition do you think may be poised to make the biggest impact?
I think it's going to be Cooks. I think that, you know, you look at a guy like that in this kind of offense, and I firmly believe that the addition of Cooks gives Brady the most complete set of wide receivers he's had since 2007. Just getting a chance to see him in the spring, you know, looking at some of his tape, looking at what he was able to do in the New Orleans system. If everything comes together like I think it will, I think Brandon Cooks has the potential to be a very special player in this passing game. You know, what he can do, the chunk plays he can snap off. There's a great piece right now. You know, if I can plug the website again, bostonsportsjournal.com, that Greg Bedard has about how Cooks projects in the New England passing game. So Cooks is the guy that I am the most interested in seeing, you know, when camp kicks off and seeing what he's able to bring to the table.
Yeah, and it's going to be as if Tom Brady needed more help, right? But I don't know if developed is the right word, but the way that his deep passing game improved last year and then bringing in one of the best vertical receivers in the NFL is just such a frightening prospect for the 31 other teams. But, man, I can't wait to see what it looks like. Chris, I was going to hold off on this question for a few minutes, but you've already made an interesting parallel talking about the offseason between 06 and 07 and Moss and Welker coming in. Everyone knows, of course, what happened in 2001. They started 16-0 and before the Super Bowl heartbreak. The legacies are secure, of course, for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, but do you think that they are chasing perfection? Do you think that really matters to this group?
Boy, it's funny you bring that up because I've asked Devin McCourty and Matthew Slater about it, and you know, Bill was asked about it during the press conference, you know, today, Wednesday morning, that, you know, some people are talking about it, and you couldn't get any greater level of distaste from either the quarterback or the players. So, you know, they're not talking about it, but I have to imagine that, you know, 19-0 is a thought, and they've thought about it. I'll say this, though. I mean, from covering this team as long as I have, there always seems to be that one game where something goes kablooey, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of years ago, it was Philly and then Miami, and, you know, they'll occasionally struggle when they go down to the Jets. It's so hard not only to win and win successfully in this league, but, you know, the idea of them going undefeated is just so incredibly overwhelming at this point, you know, sure, to even think about. So if I had to put money on it, I'd say no. I don't think that they're going to go undefeated. But yeah, that talk has already started to surface up here in New England.
You know, Chris, it's hard to fly under the radar when you come back from 28-3 and win your fifth Super Bowl of this era. But if there is a player, maybe a new addition or even a holdover that seems to maybe be flying under the radar a little bit, who might that be?
You know, that's a good question. I think that when you look at the contributions of a guy like Dante Hightower, and you look at the Patriots, and you know it's Brady and it's Gronkowski and it's Edelman and it's offense and it's, you know, 30 plus points a game, I think that we don't talk enough about the contributions of a guy like Hightower. I think that he gets a lot of the respect that he's deserved. But I think that when you discuss, you start putting together the short list of guys who, you know, have won, you know, multiple rings now and have done great things in the, you know, within the framework of this team, I don't think he gets the level of adulation that he really deserves. I think that, you know, you really take a good look at the numbers, particularly in the running game, when they're facing opposing running games, when Hightower's on the field and Hightower's not on the field. I think that, you know, the difference is really stark when you consider, you know, a Patriots defense without Dante Hightower on the field. And again, you know, he's not the first name that comes to mind. He did sign the big contract in the offseason, so he does get some, you know, he does get some run. He does get some pub. Sure. When you're talking about the Patriots. But, yeah, if you're looking for one kind of under-the-radar guy who is maybe overshadowed a little bit in New England, I would submit that Dante Hightower is probably that guy.
All right, and it'll be fun to see how he links up. Of course, it's easy to forget about David Harris, too, of course, just because he came sort of after that crazy wave of additions. But to bring in the former Jet, another respected guy in the middle, it'll be fun to see how those two sync up. Let's stick with the defense for a minute. We're chatting with Chris Price. Check him out on Twitter at CPriceNFL. Check out his work now at BostonSportsJournal.com, an exciting startup, and you can check him out in the Pro Football Weekly Preview magazine, too, the author of the Patriots Team Report. We know who the top two corners are going to be, I assume, save for the possibility of another round of talks with the Saints and Malcolm Butler. What do you think about that cornerback three spot? Is it Eric Rowe? Is it Cyrus Jones? How does that shake out?
That's one of the great questions this offseason. You know, these are first world problems that the Patriots have, but at the same time, you know, they're not as deep as they maybe would like to be at some spots. You mentioned the linebacker spot. Maybe David Harris is able to be that guy who steps up alongside Hightower. The third cornerback spot is another one of those areas. It's not like they're facing, you know, elite passing games every week, but, you know, you figure you're in pretty good shape with Butler. You're in good shape with Gilmore. And you can kind of make it work with guys like Harmon, you know, who has some cornerback level skill, McCourty, who's played corner in the NFL before, to move up from safety to corner. But you don't have that de facto easy to identify number three guy. You know, there's no slam dunk number three corner. Cyrus Jones is a possibility. You know, there's a reason that they've been sniffing around Brandon Flowers here, you know, as we're sitting here talking about this on Wednesday afternoon. Mm-hmm. He's a possibility. He's still on the market. You know, Eric Rowe, who I thought played well at times last year, he's also a possibility to be a part of that conversation. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of those areas where they're going to need to get some clarity between now and the start of the regular season. You know, who's going to be that slot corner? Who's going to be that number three guy? Because over the last couple of years, it's been a little bit uneven at that position. It hasn't been the elite level receivers who have scorched them. It's been, you know, the Quincy Enunwas, you know, the second and third and fourth guys who've been able to put together some good games against New England. So they do need to address that between now and the opener.
Chris, the Patriots addressed Rob Gronkowski's contract this offseason. He reportedly restructured, and the new deal has a lot of, reportedly, we'll see what you can tell us about this, but a lot of playtime incentives built in. What can you tell us about that and where Gronk's health is coming back from the injury-shortened season, another injury-shortened season?
Yeah, there are questions. Obviously, I mean, that's one of those things that needs to be addressed going into every season. You know, can you get 16 games out of Gronkowski? There's a reason that he hasn't played in a preseason game since 2012. He is absolutely that valuable to what they want to do and what they want to get accomplished. That being said, last year they were able to pull it off rather remarkably. They were able to win it all without him down the stretch, because they became a little more diversified. They were able to get some, you know, performances out of some guys that they didn't necessarily think that, at least at the start of the year, who could reach that level. So there are some performance-based, playtime-based incentives in that contract. I will say this. I've talked to multiple people over the course of the offseason who say that, you know, if history is any indication, Gronkowski's single-mindedness and his approach to rehab has been very encouraging, has been very heartening. He himself has mentioned that he's going to be ready to go, you know, sooner rather than later. He's mentioned it several times over the course of the offseason. So he's optimistic. The people around him are optimistic. You know, if the Patriots can wring, you know, 12, 13, 14 games out of him at the end of the year and into the postseason, we've seen it in the past. You know, he can be the kind of guy who is a difference maker in that regard.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, that's what all Patriots fans, of course, are hoping for. All Patriots are hoping for. But how smart of Bill Belichick, and gosh, we could say that on a number of different levels, but to bring in another established veteran, why, with some flexibility. Last year, it was Martellus. This year, Dwayne Allen. And I think maybe the best is yet to come for Dwayne Allen, a talented guy who hasn't been able to stay on the field. You mentioned the complete nature of this wide receiver core. Where does Malcolm Mitchell fit into it? Because his rookie flashes were awfully bright, and it seemed pretty unique the way he built up that trust with Brady and McDaniels the way he did so quickly.
Yeah, I think the key for him is that we've seen, you know, Aaron Dobson, Deion Branch, Julian Edelman. The difference is being able to build on that and being able to continue to become a better receiver, to become an established guy in the league. I think right now he is still, you know, and this is no knock on him when you consider the offense, but he's the fourth guy, and he was able to step up down the stretch. And I thought that there was a three-game stretch in November where he became, you know, the guy they thought he could become. It was the, you know, against the Niners and the Jets and the Rams, and he was able to show some things and show that he could play on a consistent basis. So, yeah, you know, he's not Jerry Rice, but at the same time, if he has a year in 2017 where he, say, you know, catches 40 balls, 45 balls for, you know, 500 yards, I think that's going to be that level of improvement that they're hoping to see from him.
And what a situation for a young guy to be in where there isn't too much pressure and he gets to learn under some pros. I'm excited about Malcolm Mitchell's future. I think it could be pretty bright as well. A couple more minutes here with Chris Price. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, at @CPriceNFL. You know, easy to forget Mitchell had the elbow thing last preseason. It's also easy to forget the Patriots did, in fact, have a draft class, Chris. I believe it's the smallest by a defending Super Bowl champion in the modern era. I saw that earlier in the offseason. But no less, there are some new rookies on board. What do you think just generally about guys like Antonio Garcia, Derek Rivers, and how this group stacks up?
I think these guys are, you know, developmental guys this year. Right. I think that, you know, Rivers is a guy who is drafted with an eye toward 2018 and beyond, especially, let's say, you know, if this is Rob Ninkovich's last year. You basically sit and you take a redshirt year and you learn and you initially make your bones on special teams and then you move into more of a starter's role in 2018 and beyond. I think Garcia is also kind of the same because they do have some questions at the tackle spot, you know, in the future. And I think that, you know, if Garcia and Rivers and McDermott, if those guys, you know, contribute on a limited basis this year, again, especially on special teams, I think the team will be encouraged. And then 2018 will be their opportunity to shine. So, you know, you always want to get contributions from your rookie class. You always want to get contributions from your, you know, your group of youngsters. But at the same time, I think those expectations should be managed when you're talking about this year's Patriots draft class, for several reasons, not the least of which this is not going to be a lot of playing time.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a marvel, though, to see Antonio Garcia. Pro Football Weekly had a first-round grade on him, and he falls to 85 to who else but the Patriots, who could be potentially nearing the end with Nate Solder. We'll see what happens there. Just a couple more quick ones for you, Chris. I'm trying to work some fantasy football stuff in, and I think one of the great conundrums in fantasy football every year is the Patriots' backfield. Finally, it produces a top-10 back, LeGarrette Blount. He is obviously allowed to walk, and in comes a restricted free agent, an unrestricted free agent, and a contract extension for the Super Bowl hero. If you had to, I know it's a dart throw, but is there a guy that you could see potentially emerging from this muddled mix?
Gillislee is going to be the guy who's going to get the bulk of the between the tackle reps for this team. And not to say he's going to have the same level of success or he's going to put up the same numbers as Blount did last year, but it sets up right now to be his job. I think Burkhead is a bit of a wild card because he can do a few different things, and we just really haven't seen him operate a whole lot within the confines of this offense. I think the White-Deion Lewis combination is going to be absolutely fascinating. I know for a fact, I talked to Ivan Fears about this on Wednesday morning, that, you know, Deion Lewis, he came back and he kind of reminded us that, you know, Deion came back from a very serious injury, and they kind of took their time working him back. That combined with the year that Blount was having in the emergency, James White gave them that luxury. But I think that's going to be absolutely fascinating to see how that breaks down in 2017. But, you know, the short answer, basically, if you're looking from a fantasy perspective, a red zone perspective, touchdowns, I think Gillislee is going to be your guy who's going to be the Blount for 2017 anyway.
All right. Yeah, it is truly an embarrassment of riches. That's an apt term to describe these 2017 Patriots. What about the next future defensive star, Chris? I think we'll probably wrap up with this. You know, we've already seen Trey Flowers and Malcolm Brown have pretty remarkable starts. Are those the two that you'd kind of highlight as maybe the next? Well, I don't want to call them foundation pieces because every time I think they find one, they're gone, whether it's Jamie Collins or Chandler Jones. But are they the next wave of future star defenders from this group?
Yeah, Flowers should be able to build on what he did at the end of the year and in the playoffs. And, you know, we all saw him have that great Super Bowl. Yep. He is a guy who is, for lack of a better term, country strong. And he's, you know, he's able to get his hands on guys and just throw them out of the way. And so I think he's emerged as a guy who started as more of a situational rusher. Mm-hmm. And is now the type of guy who I think right now is poised to take on a very serious workload in 2017. My other favorite story about him is his football model. He said this on a number of occasions, told us as a rookie, his football model, the guy he, you know, wants to be like when he's on the field is Bobby Boucher from The Waterboy. And so, you know, that's very, very important to keep in mind when you're talking about a guy like Trey Flowers. So Flowers is a guy, again, who I think you hit the nail on the head right there. He's poised to have a big 2017 coming off a really great finish to last season.
And I lied. I have one more quick one for you that just dawned on me. As you were talking, you mentioned Trey Flowers' dominant Super Bowl. Coney Ealy has one of those too, but he wasn't able to really build on it last year. It was more inconsistent. Does Belichick think he may be able to coax consistent Super Bowl-like production from Coney Ealy? And if that happens, is it going to be as one of those inside-out rushers that I know he values so much?
I think he's going to be a situational guy. There's going to be an opportunity there for him with Chris Long moving on to Philadelphia. Right. And you know, and a couple guys are going to be up for that, whether it's, you know, whether it's Coney Ealy, we mentioned Derek Rivers, he might get an opportunity. Those situational spots, you know, for especially when it comes to veterans, Belichick has always been so good at identifying those guys, managing expectations, and putting them in the best possible position to succeed. And I think the next defensive project in that regard is going to be Coney Ealy.
All right. Very interesting stuff. Chris, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. One more shout out to Chris Price. Follow him on Twitter at CPriceNFL. Make sure you are checking out his new endeavor over at BostonSportsJournal.com along with Greg Bedard. And Chris, thank you so much. We hope you have a wonderful camp, and we'd love to have you back on the show once the season kicks off.
My pleasure, Arthur. I look forward to it.
All right. That is Chris Price. And one more time, follow him on Twitter at CPriceNFL. All right, no fourth quarter collapse here, guys. The Pro Football Weekly offseason recap series is now in the books. Thank you to Knox Bardeen and Christopher Price once again, in addition to the other 30 writers who were so generous with their time and helped make this podcast possible this offseason. This show also would not be possible without our great producer, Dan Mott. I think I forgot about him on last week's show, but he is the reason that we sound as good as we do. Once you download us, Dan puts in so much hard work and seemingly drops whatever he's doing whenever new files arrive in his mailbox. So thank you very much to Dan Mott, and excited to keep working with him as the Pro Football Weekly podcast kicks it up a gear and the season nears. We've got lots of fun stuff in store for you, so don't go anywhere. The best way, of course, to make sure you never miss an episode, go to iTunes, subscribe to the PFW podcast, leave us a rating and a review while you are there. Thank you once again to Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor. And before I thank you guys, just a quick heads up at ProFootballWeekly.com, some changes. Eric Edholm, my old friend and a guy I used to be neighbors with at the last incarnation of Pro Football Weekly, he's back in the fold. So we are thrilled to have him back and to bring his awesome talents to the ProFootballWeekly.com website. I believe he will be starting for us next week. Also very sad to see my other longtime colleague, Kevin Fishbane, leaving, but it's bittersweet. I'm really happy for him because I know he's got very exciting news and a great opportunity ahead, but spent almost a decade working with Kevin and really just learned so much from him and leaned so heavily on his organizational skills and just awesome talents, whether it be writing or podcasting or again, just keeping us all in line. So the best of luck to Kevin moving forward. Don't you guys worry. He'll be back on the podcast, I promise, as soon as we're ready to talk some more Bears. He is the first guy we'll be reaching out to. So once again, the best of luck to Kevin, and thank you for everything over the years. Head to ProFootballWeekly.com right now because we've got lots of fresh content up there, and it's only getting crazier, guys. We are getting busier, and lots of really fun stuff at store at ProFootballWeekly.com, so I hope you will check that out. And now I save the biggest thank you for last. It's to you guys for being with us each week. We've been trying some things out on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I hope you've been enjoying them, but please, we're open to feedback. So hit me up on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. You can email me too, aarkish@profootballweekly.com. I love to hear from you guys, and I love to have engagement to try and find the best ways to make this podcast as enjoyable as possible moving forward. So thank you once again for everything so far. We will be back next week, if not sooner, on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and until then, guys, I hope you have a great week.